Network, proudly presents the Jay's Blade Show. With your host, CyberGolf.com's own Jay Clemmer, and co-starring a galaxy of the golf and sports world's greatest names as special guests. Yo, 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 this is your main man, DJ Q, telling you to put your hands together for your friend and mine, Jay Clemmer.
All right, thank you, DJ Q, for bringing us back in style. Love having him as one of my producers. Big thank you to Fish for giving us permission to use their music so kindly as theme song to the show. I am Jay Flama, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on Golf News Net Radio Network. Jay's Plays is brought to you by Spring 44 Vodka. It's the Colorado spring water for the freshest, cleanest, crispest vodka you've ever had. And I mean it. It really is that good. Spring 44, spring for some today. And by Swifties, all American pubs and restaurants all across New York State, I-90 and I-87. It's Swifties. All right, big thank you also to our first two guests, Steve Smyers and Jeff Brower, the outgoing and incoming presidents of the American Society of Golf Course Architects, and two very well-traveled and very well-respected architects, both of them telling us about their new courses, so it'll be a lot of fun to travel around and play their places. And now for the second half of the show, we're going to jump to one of my all-time favorites. Okay, you've heard Bruce Moulton and I gush about how much we love this golf course. You've heard a bunch of other guests of ours sort of speak of this course in holy whispers. It's one of those places that's just, it's got a magical glow to it. It's the other St. George's. No, not the one in England, the one in Long Island, the fantastic Devereaux Emmett course that, with a restoration by Gil Hanse, has once again materialized out of the mists of time. And so our two guests that are going to talk about that are Rodney Hellett, a head PGA professional for St. George's, and then we're bringing back an old favorite, golf course architecture tour expert, Pat Lucci. Pat and Rodney, welcome back to Jay's Plays.
Pleasure.
Good to see you too, Jay.
Pleasure, Jay.
It's so good to have you guys on. So, Rodney, tell me, it was a very cold winter up here. How is St. George's doing coming back this spring?
I think we're faring pretty good. Adam has done, you know, quite a bit of work. Obviously, the snow mold and the ice has killed off a lot of the Poanya. So he's been thatching, you know, aerifying, top dressing, and we're starting to see the results, and we're finally getting some good warm weather. So the grass is starting to pop. So we're bouncing back pretty good. Unfortunately, you know, some of my other fellow golf professionals have been dealing with, you know, 8, 9 temporary greens. We at one point had 4, and we just recently opened all of our greens. So we're ecstatic. The membership is ecstatic, and we're just happy to be up and running.
It was an absolutely brutal winter. Where I was, we set 2 misery records, one for the coldest month in recorded history, and the other for most days in negative integers. I mean, talk about setting 2 terrible records. But the courses are starting to come back, and St. George's has always played fast and firm in the great spirit of British Lynx. So why don't you both tell us a little bit about the history of the golf course and its architecture, and then tell us a little bit about what people can expect to see when they get to the golf course.
Well, I think Rodney knows a lot more about that than I do because he's there every day, and I'm a little bit jealous of that. But go ahead, Rodney.
Yeah, Pat. Fortunately, you know, I started work here at St. George's in 1978, so I've seen the massive changes that have taken place to the golf course. First off, Gil Hanse came in, and, you know, one of our greens chairman at the time, Tom Schreiber, went to one of the seminars, and, you know, Gil had, you know, expanded on that he was, you know, into Devereaux Emmett golf courses, and we hired him, and we brought him in, and he gave us a 10-year plan, at which time the first 10 years, I think we probably had taken out, I don't know, maybe 600 to 800 trees. Then we got the second phase, which was, I was actually with Gil when he came here and went around the golf course. changed some elevation in some of the tee boxes, brought them back to where they should have been. The other thing he wanted was the expanded fairways so that, you know, we have like a little different setup as far as bunkers, the way we have them. We actually want the balls to run into them. Versus,
as it should be, it is a hazard after
all.
Yeah,
you know, a lot of the places still maintain the rough around the edges. You know, our rough starts on really on the back side of the bunker. So what you see is when you're from the eye, you see this clean look, but the balls do roll into the bunkers now. And I think with the inception of, you know, the aerial photos that we used from the 30s was a great undertaking. And then what happened, you know, what happens at golf courses over years. And, you know, like I always said to my club, I remember when Hurricane Gloria came through and the first thing they did was they got a tree planting committee together. So they invited me into this meeting.
Right.
And I said, you know, basically, you know, you have two of the finest golf courses in the world right here on Long Island. I think before you start planting any trees, you know, I think you should call the club, go out, ride out with your committee. And, you know, those two clubs that I was alluding to were Shinnecock and National. And then you could see the pure essence of a Lynx golf course.
You very well can, and yes.
Go ahead, Pat.
Rodney, where we differ is when the hurricanes come along, I call with the green superintendent, tell him, hey, this is a great opportunity. Get up the chainsaws and get busy.
That storm was extra devastating. We really got hit hard here. And, you know, you put together a tree planting committee and you didn't shoot them all. You had them all in one room. You had a chance to get rid of them in one swoop.
I couldn't do it, but...
Okay, so tell us a little bit more. Either of you, you know, you were... Continue, Rodney. You were telling us about the Hantz restoration and renovation.
Yeah, so Gil, you know, he came in with his plan. We pretty much stuck to it, you know, tooth and nail. We expanded the fairways that we wanted to. We joined.
I'm losing Rodney.
Are you losing me?
Okay, Pat. Good. Thank you. That was a great answer, Rodney. Pat, what are your thoughts?
Well, as I said before, I'm really jealous of Rodney because he gets to play there every day. I think one of the first impressions I had of St. George's was how unique it was, both in the topography and in the way that Devereaux Emmett fit the holes into it. A lot of people refer to it sometimes as quirky. I love quirky. It's got one of my absolute favorite holes, the fourth hole at St. George's, fabulous. And it's very unique in that you'll have four holes sharing one big common fairway. The bunkering schemes are like the old days. They look a lot more penal than today's sanitized, flat bottom, not very much in depth bunkers. And while golf should be a challenge, it should be a challenge that you all aspire to meet and have fun. And I think one of the things, when you walk off the 18th green at St. George's, you say to yourself, boy, was that a lot of fun. I want to go right back to the first tee again. And that's my ultimate test on the golf course. After playing it and leaving the 18th green, do I want to go right back to the first tee? And at St. George's, that was absolutely my feeling. I just fell in love with the place. I had heard about it, but I had not played it for a while. And then when I did play it, I said, boy, I kicked myself. I wish I had been playing this every year because it's just fabulous.
It really is. You know, my St. George's story starts with a bit of good luck and a bit of misdirection. Okay, we have a common friend, Mike Whitaker. And Mike was living in New York City for, I forget, it was 6 to 9 months or maybe a year or something like that. And he had just moved. And, you know, I had taken him under my wing as a golf buddy. And at the same time, he was recommending some courses to me. And I had been working on a big story on the Five Towns courses, you know, Rockaway Hunting Club and Lawrence Yacht Club, Sea Wayne, and the like. You know, Woodmere, all of those. And Mike said to me, he goes, well, you got to go out and play St. George's. You're going to love it. It's right up your alley. Really old school Golden Age architecture. I was really swamped, and I said, well, you know, I'm doing this story on the Five Towns courses. Is it near the Five Towns courses? And he says, it's near the Five Towns courses. That's like New York is near Philadelphia. So the funny part about this, it was a holiday weekend, and I had bought my train ticket, but I hadn't bothered to look at it or take a look at a map. And so I get my golf clubs, and I remember just as the train is pulling in to take a look at a map and seeing where I'm actually going and having to call Rodney up on the phone and say, Rodney, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but I think I'm going to be much later than I expected because I'm not going where I thought I was going. And that's what happened. You know, but it's very much like, you know, the epiphany that I had was very much like the producers of the Rolling Stones album, Exile on Main Street. Okay, you have Andy Johns and Jimmy Miller, who are trying to produce a rock album in the basement of Keith Richards' mansion with all of those guys constantly trashed. And meanwhile, they're recording it in a mobile truck outside. And, you know, everything's going haywire around you. And then all of a sudden, when the boys pick up their instruments, it's this beautiful God-given music. You know, here I am, you know, I take this crazy all-day trip, you know, out to a place I've never been, and suddenly I get out there, and it's God's country, God's golf country. You know, every hole feels like it looks like it came from 1920, which it did. Remarkable resurrection of the architecture, the geometric bunkering, for example, on the fourth green, the wonderful tumbling terrain of the third fairway, which slopes hard left and hard downhill, so you can hit a 3 or 4 bounce going on, so long as you aim it, you know, off the green on the right side. It's just an all-day, you know, ride at an amusement park, one hole after another, 12 and 13, the wonderful burly par fours back and forth along that little edge, and finally the wondrous closing holes. So let's talk a little bit about your favorite parts of the golf course. Rodney, what are some of your favorite holes at St. George?
Kind of, you know, they're all unique in their own way. You know, I kind of, you know, I'm pretty stuck on like 11, 12, 13, and 14. You know, it's like the meat of our golf course. So if you can, you know, if you can play it an even par or a 1 or 2 under, you're really going to come in with a great score. And most of the time, the intimidation when everybody gets up there, you got a, you know, 194-yard par 3. Usually the wind is, in the summertime, it's usually coming out of the southeast, so it's blowing away from you, you know, from left to right. And then you get on that tough stretch of holes, 12, 13, and 14, and you know, like I said, if you can play them an even or 1 or 2 under, you know, you're gonna come in with a very good score.
That is the backbone of the golf course.
Right.
Without question, before you get to the sporty but fun finish.
Yeah.
How about you, Pat? What are some of your favorite holes?
Well, I'm one of those rare people, I guess, who really likes geometric architecture. You know, it's a throwback. A lot of people moved away from it because part of it was very penal, very harsh. But I fell in love, the moment I saw the fourth hole, I just fell in love with the dual bunker complex fronting it, the moat-like approach to the square green. I thought it was fantastic. And I also like that the pipeline fairway of the back nine. You know, it's like the pipeline, you see the surfers in reverse with that pipeline feature, and you drive there. But the neat thing about it is that there's no repetition throughout the golf course at all. Each hole, in and of itself, is unique. The bunkering complexes are unique. And it's just a sporty, and I happen to be a big fan of sporty courses. It's a very sporty course to play. I don't think there are any weak holes at all, and it's just, you know, from the moment you tee up on one till the time you get up on 18 green, it's just fun to play. And I think that the neat thing about it is the different features that you're confronted with, the different bunker complexes, the geometric, the square types, the trench types, it's just flat out fun to play. The greens are very interesting. And
they're very like small
played
greens.
Yeah, and it's like nothing you've played in the area. You know, Long Island must have, I don't know, 100, 200 golf courses, but St. George is different from the rest. I mean, it's just very, very unique in its own style. Like I said, the geometric features are the ones that I have to gravitate toward and really, really like. So, I mean, I love it start to finish. There's nothing weak about it at all.
Yeah, I like
my shape.
Oh, go ahead, Jay.
No, please go ahead, Rodney.
No, I was just going to say the difficulty on the two tier level greens that you don't see out there on the golf course, the subtleties on 14, 18, and 9. So, they we can put some little tricky pin placements, and, you know, everybody that comes here and plays, they're like, you know, how do you guys deal with these two-tier greens? I said, well, you know, there's a lot of local knowledge that goes into it. And, you know, every golf course has their, you know, form of grain on the golf course. So on the front nine, the first nine holes, the grain goes due west, and on the back nine, most of the grain is going due east, so it's a total flip, and confuses everybody with the putting. I actually, you know, I'll draw up on our little yardage books a little kind of like a little sheet just to show the players, just to help them with the speed and which way the break is going to go. But
great observation there. Yes,
I think also the two greens that come back to sheep past the road, the downhill shots and the road and the fences is, you know, really, really, you're aware of it. You know, it's a sort of a hazard removed from the green, but it's certainly a threat. I mean, it's just unique. Every hole has its own special features that make it unique. And like I said, I'm jealous of Rodney that he gets to play there every day.
Yeah, I got, you know,
my two thoughts that I come back to constantly are the feeling that I get, that same stretch that you do, from 3 to 6, okay? By the third hole, you're in love with the place. By the fourth hole, you don't want to leave. By the sixth hole, you know, it just breaks your heart that you have to finish. But the rest of the way is just so much fun. And also, the par fives, okay? The one great thing, besides everything we've talked about, is the routing at St. George's. There's no par threes in the first six holes. There's 4 par threes in the next 6 holes. So you really jump around. It's an asymmetric routing. And your par fives appear at 2, 6, and 18. Okay, and each one of them has a wonderful feature. 2 and 18 share a fairway peppered by bunkers. I liken that to the Elysian Fields out at number 14 at St. Andrews. That's what I call it. More because of the romantic feeling I get strolling across it, you know. It's like, you know, you tee off on 1, you hit it towards the hospital and you draw it in. And then on 2, you make sure that the false front and severe slope to the right don't get you. Okay, you survive the first hole, and then it's sort of like the magical gateway. You get out onto that second fairway, and, you know, you've been transported 100 years back in time. You're waving to the guys that are finishing as they play, you know, their tee shots and second shots up to 18. You know, okay. And then you've got the next 16 holes for the rest of your day. But the thing about St. George is every time we play, we want to go out and back and play 11-9. And there hasn't been a single time where we finished and quit. You know, we just got right back in the cart after grabbing a sandwich and drove someplace out of the golf course and kept hitting it. And then the wonderful finish, which is spectacular. You know, you got the par 6 where you've got your downhill shot to the green. That's an unusual characteristic to have that. And then 18, just a grand, grand finisher. You know, you've got 15 coming in, the par 3 with a diamond-shaped green, very old school. 16 with its diagonal fairway and lone tree that you can just hit the biggest, longest day of the drive and watch it soar over that baby. The pint-sized terror at 17, okay, the 130-yard card wrecker, because if you don't get to the second half of that green, you're going to roll all the way back down in one of the respectable bunkers.
That's going to be long.
I don't know about that. I'd rather go, because if you're long and you find the ball, you're hitting back towards it.
hey, Jay, though. Hey, this is a true story, though. We had a club champion at our club, and he was a great player in this metropolitan area by the name of Mike Matwell. And he told me that when he was a little boy, he did caddy for Devereaux Emmett here at St. George's.
Wow.
So, and then, you know, the true designers like Devereaux Emmett and Donald Ross, they only used to do 3,000 to 4,000 rounds a year back then. So really great thing is if you really wanted to walk the golf course, as you notice, the proximity when you come off the greens, you're so close to the next tee box
yeah.
that you step off the green. And, you know, I think that was a flavor that's gone today in golf that, you know, we still have it here at St. George's on quite a few holes.
You do. St. George's is an easy walk. The greens and tee boxes are close, which is a beautiful thing. Let's go ahead. You were saying, Pat.
Didn't Devereaux Emmett have a summer home close by? Ryan?
Yes, he did. He lived in the area.
Yeah.
He was a club champion at the club here besides. And, you know, he was just a fabulous man for us to have here at St. George's.
Ronnie, how many bunker lessons do you give? Because, you know, with the bunker complex at St. George's, I would think that a lot of golfers would need to hone up on their bunker skills.
Yeah, well,
you
know, we run a lot of clinics for the members. And, the latest inception of this 60-degree wedge that is really popular, because we have those old school, you know, bunkers, like you were saying before, you know, what happens with ours is, you know, a lot of times the balls will go in and they kind of carry them and they'll fall to either one side or the other. So you have to have that 60-degree wedge to get the ball up quickly, because now you're looking at like a 4 or 5 foot, you know, grass berm leading up to the front edge of the green. So, you know, I recommend going back and forth between the 56 and 60 all the time. And thank God they made that club, because a lot of our players use it here at St. George's.
Yeah, it makes a big difference getting the ball up quickly. But the bunkering complex, as I said, a lot of the greens are almost surrounded, like I said, 17, 4, 18.
Right.
I mean, it's almost like it's a moat. It's almost like you're storming a castle with a moat surrounding it. And if you go long, you're in trouble. You go left, right, in trouble. You go short,
right.
You're in trouble. And I think that puts a pressure on precision. You know, you just can't spray and miss
true.
It either way.
Yeah, well, we have,
let me ask
you know,
question, Roddy. Have you ever seen a green like the fourth green where it's defended by a bunker, a berm, and then another deep bunker behind it, and then the green obviously surrounded on the other three sides by it's unique to all the golf I've ever seen.
Yeah.
I've only seen
one like it, and it's on the South Shore. It's at Belport Country Club. And they have
And I've seen it a couple of times too. I've seen it at Lake Placid, and I saw it at the Gales course in Michigan at Lakewood Resort or Lakewood Shores
yeah.
or something.
That's
it
the,
is
that's
a very old golden age feature.
Right.
But I've
yeah,
never
it's
seen
pretty...
it executed that well as it has been at St. George's. A perfect square and bunkers in front on both sides and behind. So before
yeah,
we go to break, one quick question to both of you. Let's talk very quickly about some of our other favorite Devereaux Emmett courses. You know, I think St. George's is absolutely one of the greatest courses, not just in the area, but in the country. It can be spoken of in the same sentence as Garden City and, you know, other great Emmett courses such as Rockaway Hunting Club and Leatherstocking are right up there as well. Those are favorites of mine. What are some of your other favorite Emmett courses and favorite Emmett features?
I like Seawayne with the canals and everything else is kind of neat.
Yeah,
yes,
I like
very much so.
I like Huntington Country Club. I like the idea there. You know, he's got that that long par 3 on the ninth hole there. You know, going back to the clubhouse. I believe it's the ninth hole.
Another great choice too. Yes, go ahead, Pat.
Hey, Jay, isn't it funny that when you walk onto these courses, whether it be Seawayne or St. George's or Garden City, that there's just a flavor there that you get from the architecture feedback. And to think that these guys did this with mules and shovels
yeah,
and
no,
without GPS
yeah.
and everything else. And
absolutely.
They were, and by the way, and these courses have lasted for, you know, 100 years, you know, and they're still fun to play. It seems to me that those old, dead, great architects just had an ability to create something that was so unique that it would last for a century and still be enjoyable for the modern-day golfer. And like I said, when you walk on those courses, in an instant, you know they're special.
That's a great observation. So I will hit you boys now with the trivia question. Okay. What modern course was also done by hand, and in fact may very well have been chiseled out of the oceanside rock with hammers and with chisels and no bulldozers at all, but with donkeys? Any guesses on what true great course of the world was fashioned by hand like that?
Golly, Teeth of the Dog?
And it is an oceanside course. And my hint is the world, and it's modern, so that should give you a good enough hint.
I don't know about you, but I'm clueless.
I'm clueless, too.
How about Teeth of the Dog, boys?
I said Teeth of the Dog.
Oh, well, Pat, I both of you, I have to give you the wonderful news. You definitely have to play it. It is out of this world. But we're going to take a short break. We're going to come back with more on St. George's, more on Deborah Emmett, a little bit about the tour, a little bit about Chambers Bay for the U.S. Open in Wingfoot. We're talking with Pat Mucci, golf course architecture expert, and Rodney Heller, the head PGA professional at St. George's. I am Jay Flemma of CyberGolf. You're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.
That bump music means we're going to have to take a short break. Don't go away. We'll be back at the second half of the show in just a minute.
This is your main man, DJ Q, and you're listening to Jay's Plays on the Golf News Net Radio Network.